Hello and welcome to Policy Pathways, a new podcast series focusing on the policy challenges of food, land, and water systems transformation. The project is brought to you by the CGIAR National Policies and Strategies Initiative and is produced by the International Water Management Institute. My name is Chavi Sachdev. I'm a journalist based in Mumbai, India. Today, we're talking about the National Policies and Strategies Initiative Policy Coherence Report for Laos, a country I don't know well, but somewhere I'm very excited to learn more about. Joining me for this conversation is Seng Phachan Sonathavisay, Country Coordinator and Monitoring and Evaluation Expert at the Australian Centre for International Agricultural Research, and also Laos NPS Report Lead Author and IVMI National Researcher for Laos, Supalak Inponpong. We also have a contribution from Dr. Latsime Phonvisuk, Deputy Director of the Rural Agricultural Economic and Policy Research Center of the National Agriculture and Forestry Research Institute in Laos. Thank you all for taking the time to take part in this podcast. Now, as I mentioned at the top of the show, Laos is not a country I know well, but one I definitely want to find out more about. So to give me and our listeners a heads up, we'd like to ask for a little explainer about the local geography and the economy so that we can be more attuned to the conversation we're about to have about food, land, and water systems in this fascinating place. Seng, can you possibly be our geography teacher for a moment and tell us a little bit about Laos?
Thanks, Chubby. Laos is a Southeast Asian country, navigated by the Mekong River. Also known for mountainous landscape. Of course, we are surrounded by this, what we call giant country. We have neighboring country like China in the north, in the west with Thailand, in the south with Cambodia, and in the east with Vietnam. Talking about our landscape, let's say 70% of the total land is mountainous area. I think it's the figures in 2023, we have like 7.6 million people. And of course, more than 70% of the population rely on agriculture.
Since we're talking about food, land, and water systems, and since you said agriculture is the mainstay of most people's livelihoods, what is the sort of agriculture we're talking about? And what are the main crops you grow in Laos?
Our main crop, of course, rice, because it's a staple for Laos. Maize, cassava, coffee, tea, banana, and different kind of vegetable. I'm talking about crop. And of course, then if we move on to livestock, there will be cattle, buffaloes, and poultry, this kind of thing.
All right. And those all need land, water, and food resources, of course. One of the big issues for any country is food security. The World Food Summit, organized in Rome in 1996, states that food security exists when all people at all times have physical and economic access to sufficient, safe, nutritious food to meet their dietary needs and food preferences for an active life. In practical terms, this means that there's a balancing act for countries between growing enough food domestically and supplementing that with imports. We discussed this with Dr. Latsime with regards to food security in Laos, and this is what she said.
If compared to the food production in our country and imports, this day we import a lot, especially for agriculture products. We import from China, Thailand, and Vietnam. Agriculture product that we import is cheaper than we produce in our country.
So this is exactly Dr. Latsime's point. When imports are too cheap, small producers at home can struggle. The cost of producing food will always be at the mercy of various factors, but my understanding is that at the heart of it lies the effective management of land and water systems. So Supalak, if I can turn to you on the issue of food security, presumably there is increasing pressure on both land availability and also water availability for irrigation. Are these issues that you've identified in your NPS report?
Yeah, based on my interview with key informants, one of the issues that they share with me is their concern around the availability of land for farmers to produce their rice. However, this is due to a number of factors. One of the concerns is about turning agricultural land into other type of economic development activities would be one of the challenge for food production. Currently, government of Laos is implementing its national master plan on land allocation, but the implementation on the ground level, I mean at the community level, is not being completed yet. So we still maybe confusing which part of the land would be the land used for the agriculture or the other activities for country development.
Of course, as Supalak mentions, the government is trying to turn land to capital. What we mean is the land for concession. Concessions agreement is including monocropping for agricultures and also a special economic zone, which is buildings, buildings, housings, and other service activities. And then by the end, land availability is, of course, affect food security.
That seems to be happening everywhere, this sort of tension between development, but then also protecting our futures and our food sources. Thinking about water, though, for a minute, the Mekong River runs through the middle of Laos and then along the border with Thailand. Aseng, can I ask you to explain the significance of the river to the country's water needs? This is a transnational river that crosses many, many countries. What is the significance of this politically as well as geographically for irrigation and day-to-day household and industry and stuff?
Laos is rich in water resources, and it has per capita water resources about 55,000 cubic meter for per year. And of course, 35% of the water Laos contributes to Mekong River, and most of the water from tributary from Laos. Of course, when we are talking about irrigations, and even we are rich in water, but only 20% we cover the need for irrigation.
Actually, it's more about water management and the geographical area. For example, in the lowland, there's no problem about irrigation access since we have Mekong River to supply the water for irrigation. But in the northern part, we don't really have that kind of large water source, and the irrigation water source came from underground water. And as you may know, in order to find underground water, it really depends on the location as well. And the groundwater capacity to supply water might be limited as well.
Now, of course, one of the biggest challenges in food, land, and water planning policy is climate change. Some countries are better resourced than others, while some are better at planning and adapting to this challenge. I wanted to find out where Laos is right now and put this to Dr. Latsumi.
Yes, climate change is really effective for agriculture product, especially for farmers to do agriculture production. But right now, it's not the same. Rainy season is start from June to October. This big challenge for farmers, they cannot adapt with the climate change. Also, right now in Laos, we don't have policy or strategy for the climate change. We have only agriculture and forestry and rural development strategy.
Dr. Latsumi makes an interesting point. Clearly, adapting to climate change is a real issue for the government of Laos. And as she makes clear, the farmers' traditional crop cycle has been disrupted, with the rainy season coming much later in the year than usual. Saying, perhaps you could unpack this for us? How is climate change affecting food, land, and water systems in Laos?
Yes, Laos is vulnerable to climate change, which is considered as critical for driver of food insecurity, as combining with declining of land availability or unstable climates. But of course, that Laos farmers face, let's say, disaster, particularly to droughts, flood and typhoon, and all this hampering the developments of agriculture. And it's not only the climate change is causing declinings of productivity of agriculture product, but it's also causing the many disease, whether it's the livestock disease, crop disease, it's all coming up.
Yes, especially the effect on the public investment, for example, is quite big loss for the government when they got flooded and they have to like spend the money for management and repairing the irrigation scheme. And also the country entering the drought, it is also affect the efficiency of the irrigation use as well. So part of the recommendation would be allow the irrigation adaptation and also about the design of irrigation scheme, the management of water for irrigation supply would need to be like a climate change resilient adaptation.
I see. This is all quite challenging. And I wanted to ask though, from the NPS study, I got the impression that you have a good, strong working relationship with the government. When producing this kind of work, we've seen that lifting the lid on areas where the government needs to make improvements can be a sensitive topic. I was wondering what the experience has been like for your country and in the report writing and information gathering and the information sharing you've done with the government.
I think it's quite open for our key informants who participate in the interview to share their thoughts, to share their experiences about what's going on in terms of their perspective about how policy were formulated and the issue on the implementation of those policies.
Seng?
Thanks to the process we designed from the beginning as well for the NPS, how we assess the government policy, we actually involve the key stakeholder, the governments, to prioritize which policy that we need to look into details, also con assess based on the NPS criteria, let's say, and that from moving on from the agreement that how many policy that we are going to assess or looking into details in terms of assessments. And then along the lines, then we also, I think leading by Supalak also have to interview the government in more detail in terms of their perspective and implementations along each policy that we identify as prioritized policy.
In the case of Laos, even though we have like a different ministry to do different policy, but the good thing is that we have a kind of the common national socio-economic development plan where every sector formulate their policy based on this national country development strategy.
There are different layers of policy implementation. At the country levels, we have national, social, and economic development plans. And then moving at the sector level or ministerial levels is based on the strategy of each sector. And then underneath, you also have sub-sectors, strategy or, let's say, frameworks, this kind of dividends in terms of role and responsibility is quite good. But more work need to be done even when we are talking about the subsector level. Some issue is cross-cutting issue, which is you need to involve different ministries, different line agency, and that more work to be done in terms of coordinations and collaborations.
Interesting. So it sounds like the government is aware, but also open to your suggestions and interventions. We're talking about policy coherence in food, land, and water systems. So it really sounds as though there's quite strong government structures in place and that the policies are really quite cross-sectional. So then the question remains about implementation. Does Laos have the capacity to implement policy change, or is something else going on that is a bigger challenge than just identifying the issues?
In terms of implementing the policy, actually one of the challenges that also mentioned in the national socio development plan is about the lack of financial support is also the lack of public financing as well.
Okay, so funding is really a big issue.
I think in terms of policy implementations, moving on rather than focusing only on finance, but I would say is lack of adequate resources or capacity to carry out the policy activities or delivery the policy output. The resource can include financial, human, technical, so material resource. Why capacity is can refer to skills, set of knowledge and motivations of the implementer. And of course, if the policy require more resources or capacities than what is available, it can lead to delay or inefficiencies or failure in the implementation process.
Interesting. So intention is clearly not the problem here, but it's putting that intention into action that has many stumbling blocks. And of course, financing is a big one. Everything depends on money, including resources, skill development, technology, acquisition of machinery, all these kinds of things. Does your report touch upon where this funding can come from? What, if anything, is the solution?
Of course, currently or from the past, the government rely on so-called donor funding. But we have to go deep into detail as from donor, as if some donor is loan as well, right? And then it's not all granted. But of course, the government also thinking about the long term, which is, of course, in terms of attract investment. And then one policy, what we mentioned is turning land to capital. Laos is also exporting a lot of energy too, and that's part of money coming from. Long-term perspective is generating income from investment. And that's why even in agriculture sector, for the time being, the government is also looking into the agribusiness policy in terms of generating income from that angle.
Yeah. In addition to what Zhang mentioned, of course, this is a kind of government strategy to prioritize development plan and strategy as well. Once we are graduating to, when we graduate our country to a middle income country, I would say the government would be capable to implement development strategies.
Let's also talk a little bit about civil society and stakeholders. In many of our conversations on the subject with people in other countries participating in the study, a topic that's come up in the NPS reports is that civil society engagement seems to have been really important. It's something they flagged. And to what extent is civil society engaged in policy decisions in Laos? And what recommendation is the report making in this area?
In terms of involvement of civil society, I think the government is quite open. I participate in developing certain policy, which is we involve the civil society, so what we call NGO. It's their contributions is various, is from even we look at their research, right? It's part of their contribution, research finding from them through consultations process. They also involved in that. Even if we are talking about at the national level, the socio-economic development plan of the country is the UN's, and of course the UN also involved in several NGO. I would say is the government is quite open, and a number of policy has been involving CSO or NGOs in that.
What about at a more local level, Supalak? What about civil society organizations or even contributions from farmers or livestock holders?
I think CSO and development partner as a whole are really key actors to support the government of Laos to implement development policies.
When we develop this so-called green and sustainable agriculture framework, we involve farmer and civil society organizations, and their involvement is at different level too. And then whether you start from the research where you interview farmer and they express their concern and also their recommendation, what they need. And that's how we bring up to the table.
That is so interesting. So really, is there a good feedback loop for local people? Are their voices heard in making policy decisions?
Through my experience in terms of formulating the policy, I think it's really good voice from farmers and policymaker listen voice from farmers. And of course, as researchers, we also try different communication channels to voice farmer too.
Interesting. What about diversity? I know that Laos has a lot of very different ethnicities and tribes, as also, of course, there are women involved in farming and other minority groups. Is this also represented in the policy and in your recommendations?
Ethnic minorities is similar to what we call voice from farmer, because farmer is also mixed up with ethnic cities. When we are talking about land titling, where the government trying to encourage like a women's, whether you want to list your name in the land titlings. But of course, at the end, it's also, how to say it, the government can give the knowledge or explanation for their understanding on the purpose, on the benefit of being named in the land titling. But at the end, is their choice as well.
Right, right. Awareness is the most important cornerstone of this. Well, I hate to break up this conversation. It's been absolutely illuminating, but that is all we have time for today. To find out more about what we have coming up in the series, please subscribe to the Policy Pathways podcast, where you'll be able to track back to our other discussions with reports from India, Kenya, Egypt, Nigeria, and Colombia. There will be a transcript of today's conversation available on our feed. It just remains now for me to thank our experts, Dr. Latsumi, Dr. Sengpachan.
Thank you, Chavi.
And Supalak.
Thank you for having us.
My pleasure. I'm Chavi Sachdev. Studio production for Policy Pathways was by Wild Dog. The music was by Mark Peter Royce. Our series producer was Alan Nickel. And the production was by Louisa Chandler-Edmund for the International Water Management Institute. Our program editor was Andrew Johnstone. Thank you all for listening, and goodbye.